Let's learn a couple verses together this morning, shall we? Repeat these words after me if you're willing to do such a thing in public. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. And lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge Him in all your ways. And He will make your path straight. Those are the verses we're working on today. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge Him in all your ways, and He will make your... I know that's not what that says. But this is where I learned it. Acknowledge Him in all your ways, and He will make your path straight. We'll come back to these verses. In Luke chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and His disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, 'Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?'" You know this deal, right? The Sabbath was the anniversary of the day God finished creating. He made everything in 6 days, and then He took a day to enjoy what He had done. That's why weeks are 7 days long. There's no other reason for weeks to be a 7 day period. A day is measured by the time the earth spins around once. A month is measured by the time the moon spins around one time. A year is measured by one trip around the sun, but a week is nothing, except it's measured by how many days God created plus a day of enjoying it. And God told the nation of people that He was working with, especially, He said, "I want you to work 6 days in a row, that's fine, but then I want you to stop for one day, and I want you to enjoy Me and everything that I've made. No normal working on the seventh day," God said. "I just want you to rest and think about how good I am and how we're connected." That day of relaxation and worship was called the Sabbath day. But people in charge of God's people had made up a bunch of extra rules about what you could and could not do on the Sabbath day, and mostly it was what you could not do on the Sabbath day, which was sad and weird and wrong, because God intended it to be a happy occasion. But the leaders of the people had turned the Sabbath day into a day of details and duty and drudgery. And picking grain from the side of the road because you were hungry, kind of like if we were walking through a field, we're walking on a road through a field, past an orchard, and we found some apples that had rolled out of the field onto the road. If we picked one up and polished it up and polished it off, that would be no big deal, right? That would be fine. It just rolled out there. It's fine. Picking grain from the edge of a field was not against the rules back then, except on the Sabbath day, because the leaders said, that's like harvesting, and harvesting is work, and there is no work on the Sabbath day. Now, what they did was not work. That did not bother God, but the religious leaders had made up these extra rules. Luke tells us of another situation where their Sabbath rules kind of got pretty messed up. In verse 6, Luke says, "On another Sabbath, Jesus went into a synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched Him closely to see if He would heal on the Sabbath." So, they did not have a rule against doing miracles on the Sabbath day, probably because that didn't come up a lot. There was not much need to legislate what never happened. You don't have to say people are not allowed to swim across Lake Ontario, because nobody does that. Nobody needs to say you can't fly to the moon. No, there is no need for a law that says you cannot celebrate a Super Bowl win in Buffalo by beating on pots and pans all night. There is no need for such a law yet. But there was nothing on the books back then saying that Jesus couldn't do miracles on the Sabbath, but they did have several rules against healing people on the Sabbath, because healing is what doctors do, and healing people is work, and work is what the leaders said offended God, so no healing on the Sabbath, that's what they said. And at this church assembly, they knew Jesus would show up, and they knew that a guy who had always had a messed up hand would be there. He was always there. And they kind of hoped Jesus was going to fix this man so they could bust him. They were going to take this rule-breaking, irritating upstart down once for all. They were going to catch him. They were watching. They were waiting. They were ready to pounce. They were going to get Jesus. Linda and I got to screen a movie that is coming out on Valentine's Day next year. It's called Jesus Revolution. And it is the story of Greg Laurie becoming a follower of Jesus and getting married. Lionsgate is the company that's making the movie, and they let the 300 of us that were at the Michael W. Smith weekend screen this film, which seemed cool to me. I'd never gotten to see a movie before it was released before. They passed out evaluation forms as we walked in. They wanted our feedback. They wanted our ideas on how to make this movie better. So when this movie comes out and it's a big hit, I'm going to take credit for much of, well, anyways. It was all cool. But before they turned out the lights, the guy in charge said, one more thing. He said, "We trust that you're all good people. I mean, for heaven's sake, you're here at a Michael W. Smith weekend, so we know that you're all good. But piracy is a really big deal in our industry. So these two gentlemen are here tonight to protect our film." And he turned and he pointed to two very large men. One was a former middle linebacker or a championship wrestler, I couldn't tell which. The other guy looked to be a mafia hitman. I'm pretty sure he was mafia. They were standing behind the screen that we were going to watch the movie on. They were facing us with their arms crossed, and they had no expression on their face. And the guy who was leading said, "These two guys will not be watching the film tonight. Instead, they will be watching you watch the film tonight. And should they, at any point in the next 2 hours, see a phone in your hand, they will remove it." I was not sure if they meant the phone or the hand. So I kept both in my pocket the whole time. Then he said, "Are we clear?" And everyone laughed nervously. And he said, "Good, enjoy the show." And for the next 2 hours, those two guys stood there, stared at us the whole time, no expression. I asked them later, "Did you ever have to take a phone away from somebody?" And they said, "Oh yeah." And I said, "You probably did that well, didn't you?" And they said, "Oh yeah." And as I walked away, I said, "You guys are scary." And all the people behind me said, "Yes, they are." That's probably how it was at the synagogue when Jesus walked in that Saturday. The religious leaders had large men standing over in the shadows waiting. And the leaders are thinking, "Go ahead, Jesus, make our day." They were hoping he'd break one of their rules. They were ready to blow him up. And before we get to what happened, can I take a minute here and just say that if your following of God ever leads you to hope that you're going to catch people doing it wrong, you're probably not doing it right. No, wait, you're definitely not doing it right. If we ever find ourselves thinking, "I sure hope I can nail that person because they are so out of bounds," you're out of bounds. Stop, do not pass go, do not collect $200. You are out of bounds. We should not hope to catch other people in wrong. But we can get that way. When others aren't doing life like we like life being done, when others worship Jesus different than we do, when others do their home life different than we do, when others vote differently than we do, when others use their money differently than we think money should be used. We're not even talking about people who do real wrong things, things God says are actually wrong. Often it's just people who do things that aren't wrong, but they're doing them in a way we wouldn't. They're not wrong things, they're just different, and yet we jump on them and we say, "Bad, bad, bad. God is going to be so disappointed with you because you do it that way." God had said the Sabbath day should be kept holy. People should take a break from their normal activities and honor and enjoy me on that day. And they had added all kinds of restrictions and they'd sucked the joy out of the day. And they hoped on this Sabbath day that they could catch Jesus doing something wrong and they were going to end his popularity. If we ever find ourselves with that attitude, stop it. Verse 8, but Jesus knew what they were thinking. And he said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Get up and stand in front of everyone." So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to destroy it?" He looked around at them all and then said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was completely restored. Jesus is so genius. They're thinking they're going to get him on this one, and he ends up teaching them and everyone else an important lesson. And his question about what's okay to do on the day that we're supposed to be honoring God, Jesus's question, should we do good on the Sabbath day like I'm going to do, or should we do evil like you're planning to do? Should we save life like I'm going to do for this man, or should we destroy life on the Sabbath like you want to do to me? Jesus' brilliance takes the argument out of their trickiness and shows what God really wants to have happen. The Sabbath was supposed to make life better for people, not crush them. So Jesus made this man's life better. And he made the world better. And the religious leaders got furious mad. Similarly, when they challenged Jesus on the disciples harvesting grain on the Sabbath day, back in our old church building, we used to keep the communion trays downstairs in an old refrigerator. We used to have these little pieces of bread when we did communion, little chiclets. Do you ever do those? We used to have those, and then we'd have tiny cups of grape juice, and we put them in big gold trays. And whatever we didn't use on Sunday morning, we'd put down in the refrigerator for the next week. One Sunday after the assembly, I don't know why, I had to run downstairs for something, and I came upon a communion raiding party. There were six little kids, all 7 years or younger, who had discovered a treasure trove of these little cups of grape juice. And they were having a tea party or a drinking party, downing shot after shot and tossing their empties on the floor. And when I burst into the kitchen, the look of horror on their faces. That's what the religious leaders were hoping to get out of Jesus and his guys when they said, "What are you doing eating grain on the Sabbath day?" But again, Jesus turned the tables on them. And not only did he end up not looking bad, he ended up teaching again, something very important. He referred them back to the time when their hero David had been running for his life, and he stopped in and snatched the holy bread that God said was for Bible college graduates only. No one else was allowed to eat that bread. Only the best, most religious, most holy, and the most studious guys. And David grabbed that bread and doled it out to all his very non-Bible collegian soldiers that he was running with. Even though it was clearly against the rules, the religious leaders told that story kind of with pride. They gave David a pass because, you know, it was an emergency and he was David. And then Jesus pulls a clever legal move. They say, "Ha, we caught you. You are bad." But Jesus did what smart kids do everywhere. Jesus points out that their judging is biased. He says, "How can you say that about me when you say that about him? Have you ever caught your son doing something that goes against the family rules and you say, 'Oh, that's not good.' And your son says, 'Well, Carice does it.'" I mean, hypothetically speaking, your son would say something. He would say, "Well, your daughter does it and you don't punish her." Or worse, when you catch your daughter doing something wrong, goes against family rules, and you say, "Nope, nope, nope." And she says, "Well, mom was doing it too." I mean, where am I supposed to go with that? They say, "You can't do that." And Jesus says, "That's interesting, because your number one guy did far worse. He did actual worse, and you're okay with that." But that wasn't even Jesus' real defense. That was good, but he had something better. In verse 5 of Luke 6, Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath, period." Now, that just seems like a statement to us, but that was a proclamation from Jesus. He said, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." They'd made up all these rules about what couldn't be done on the Sabbath. They acted like they were lords of the Sabbath. They could tell people what could and could not be done on that particular day. They spoke for God, they thought. Jesus said, "It's my day. I make the rules. If I say they can eat grain, they can eat grain. Period." And the sheer audacity of such a claim made their brains burn. That was a "who died and made you God" moment, with Jesus saying, "Right, I have the right to say. I can say if they eat grain on Saturday or not. I can say if a guy who's not got a normal hand can be fixed on Saturday or not. I can say whatever I want, because the Sabbath day belongs to the Lord, and the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Having established that, Luke goes on to include what Jesus said about other days. Interesting stuff. In verse 20, looking at his disciples, Jesus said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort." Now, it seems to us like Jesus is kind of confused here, because he says exactly opposite of what almost everybody in the world thinks. Somebody did a survey recently and they said, they asked a lot of people, would you rather be rich and miserable or poor and happy? Rich and miserable or poor and happy? And the predominant answer, well, I don't care about the predominant. The interesting answer was somebody said, could I be semi-wealthy and moderately depressed? Jesus tells us the truth about life, and he says mostly we have it all backwards. We think wrong about everything. Jesus said in verse 25, woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you'll be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. That's weird. Do you think Jesus could be right with his backward stuff? Do you think he's even in the ballpark? It gets worse. Try this one. Jesus said in verse 26, woe to you when everyone speaks well of you. Yeah, woe to you. For that is how their ancestors treated the false prophets. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. For that is how their ancestors treated the prophets. Huh. And then the verses Grant read for us, Luke 6, verses 27 through 42, just get harder to believe. Suffice it to say, if you were to do what Jesus says in those 16 lines, you would live your life different from almost every other person on the planet today. Love your enemy, really. You try that sometime, and people who care about you will tell you that you're crazy, stop it. Your friends will shake their heads when you try to explain why you're doing it. They'll say, that will never work, that's dumb, stop it. But if you don't choose to do what Jesus says, you won't end up where you want to be. The afternoon before we got to watch the movie with the scary men who were watching us, the afternoon before that, a bunch of people there that weekend decided to go for a hike up the North Carolina mountain that we were staying on. It was supposed to be a hike 4 miles up. The path was kind of steep, they said. They warned us it might be kind of challenging to go, but they thought everybody could do it. And it leads to a beautiful lookout over several valleys. It's definitely worth the climb. So there were people who showed up when it was time to leave in hiking gear. There were people who came in shorts. They were going to sprint up to the top and then come back down. There were people who showed up in jeans. Some of the older people showed up in dress pants. I didn't know what that was about, but there were many levels of hiking ability of hikers that day. Some of them raced. Some of them were just trying to make it up and back. I stayed in the back with some of the people going slower because I wanted to help, just to be clear. Just helping. Somebody had to stay back. I told them I would go with these people. We had walkie-talkies to stay in touch with the people who were definitely going to be way ahead of us. We quickly lost sight of most of the pack before we got out of the parking lot. No worries, we're going to take our time. It's all good. We got to one part of the trail where there was a clear split. There was a Y in the road, and when you come to the Y in a road, you're supposed to take it, right? So one path led to the left, one path led to the right. The left-hand path had a sign. It had a sign that said, trail closed, do not enter. It had a barricade there, little sawhorse. It had caution tape around it, said, do not enter. But the sign directly behind the barricade said, Gap Cove Overlook, this way, 2.5 miles. So we called on the walkie-talkie. Hey, anybody, do we climb over this barricade or do we keep going? Hey, anybody, no answer. Hey, anybody. Somebody came up behind us and said, oh, I'm going to climb over, but this way is steep. I've done this before. Going the other way is definitely easier. And we were the slow group, so of course we chose to keep going. The path of least resistance is what was what. Let me fast forward here, past the part where the trail disappeared, past the part where we are seriously heading away from the summit, past the part where we got to a fence that appeared suddenly on our left with signs that said, trespassers will be shot. Past the part that after a long ways of walking straight uphill with lots of leaves and rocks, straight uphill, we started heading downhill for a long time. Downhill, and we were supposed to be going up to the overlook. Let's just get to the part where we got to the cliff. That was it. There's a cliff. Couldn't go down. Couldn't go anywhere. So we went back. Are you with me? Yeah. So were several people who had agreed to try this walk if they could go really slowly and if it wouldn't be too hard. For the joy of looking, they had tried. But now we had to retrace every step we had taken, knowing we were going to see nothing. When we finally got back to the lodge, several hours after we began, having experienced no mountaintop experience, we said to the person who had stopped and directed us to keep going, "Why did you tell us we could go that way?" He said, "Oh, lots of people have gone that way." We said, "But it doesn't lead to the summit." He said, "Huh, I thought it did." Jesus says, "Go this way." Other people say, "Ooh, that way looks hard. Let's go the easier way." And at first, it might be easier. It might seem easier, but in the end, you won't get to where you want to be. Do you remember the story, the scripture that we started with today? "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, acknowledge him in all your ways, and he'll make your path straight." Whatever Jesus says about who is well off in life and who is in trouble, whatever Jesus says about how you should treat people in your life who hurt you, whatever Jesus says about being generous both with your money and your goodwill, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all of your ways and he will make your path straight, meaning you will get to where you want to be if you listen to Jesus. And in the middle of all this really challenging stuff that Jesus is saying, by the way, this chapter is Luke's abbreviated version of the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is some tough stuff. A college English professor had freshmen read and respond to the Sermon on the Mount. Just recently, he asked a whole bunch of freshmen to read the Sermon on the Mount, and the overwhelming response, the overwhelming theme of their reactions was, after reading the Sermon on the Mount, "You gotta be kidding me." The students said, "I don't like that at all. Who could do that? That's crazy. That doesn't even make sense." Like somebody who said, "Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found hard and not tried." They said, "We can't do that. Nobody could do this. This is impossible." But there's one line in here in the Sermon on the Mount, one line in Luke chapter 6 that our culture really digs. They quote this line all the time. In Luke 6:37, it's where Jesus says, "Don't judge and you won't be judged." And lots of people who have no time for listening to or obeying Jesus in any other way say, "See, Jesus said it, no judging. Don't judge," which is kind of weird because those same people judge people who are judgmental. And Jesus did say, "Don't judge and you will not be judged," but he's not saying never make distinctions between good and what's not good. Listen to the whole thing Jesus tells us about living and see if there's not more to what Jesus is saying. In verse 37, Jesus says, "Do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you won't be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it'll be measured to you." Seems like Jesus is telling us that what goes around comes around. Did you hear about the guy who opened up the cookie after he ate his Chinese meal? You know the cookie? He opened it up and there was nothing in there. And he said, "Oh, how unfortunate." I am not saying that Jesus affirms karma here, but Jesus repeatedly teaches the concept of sowing and reaping, of planting and harvesting. If you come at people with a bad attitude all the time, that's usually what you're going to get back. If you deal with people with a positive spirit, you will often find yourself glad that you did. A modern day version of all of this would be the bumper sticker that says, have you seen this one? "Mean people suck." Okay, you got to think about that, right? There's a bumper sticker. "Mean people suck." How about generous, cheerful, upbeat people or mean, surly, grumpy people? Who do you want to work with? Who do you want to live with? Who do you want to be part of a church with? Generous, cheerful, upbeat people, or mean, surly, grumpy people? Jesus says if you treat people around you with respect and with goodwill, you will benefit in life. You want to get to where you want to be? You want your life to be better? It's more than this, but it's not less than this. Your attitude matters. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all your ways, and he'll make your path straight. At the bottom of this page of Jesus' teaching stuff, Luke includes one more story about that Jesus told about himself. In verse 46, Jesus said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I'll show you what they're like. They're like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When a flood came, the torrent struck the house, but couldn't shake it because it was well built." a firm foundation, a strong base, something upon which you can depend. That's what people who trust in the Lord with all their hearts have. If you will acknowledge him in all your ways, if you will do what he says, you will be solid. But, verse 49, Jesus says, the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete. Jesus is not talking about people who don't know. Jesus is not talking about people who haven't heard. That's sad. If people haven't heard, if they don't even know, if they haven't been given a chance, missionaries give people a chance. They're obviously not leaning on their own understanding, those people, because that they're doing they are leaning on their own understanding. That's the best they've got. They don't know what the Lord says. Jesus is talking about people who hear his words. They know what Jesus says, but they don't live them. That's really sad, because they have got what could have led them to good, and they say, no thanks, which kills Jesus. He wants us to live life like it was supposed to be lived. He tells us how, and when people say no, have you ever known something? Like, you really know for sure? You know, God helps you, you just know this, and you try to tell someone who needs to know what you know, and they say, they don't believe you. I had that experience once on a mission trip. We were up in the Panamanian mountains at Plano de Chorcha. That's a village that consists of 7 huts. That's all. And we built them a pavilion, which was going to act as a shelter from weather and a school and a church building. And there was a 3-year-old boy in Plano de Chorcha named Orlando. And he was a little cutie, and all the girls on the trip just adored him. During breakfast one morning, a girl on the trip bit into an apple that we had brought for our breakfast, and she said, yuck, ugh, gross, this is all brown. Ugh. She said, where can I throw this away? This is disgusting. And I said, Danielle, give it to Orlando. And she said, oh, no way. Why would he want it? Oh, it's brown inside. I took a bite out of it. I said, give it to Orlando. And she said, okay. And when she offered the 3-year-old little boy her apple, he got the biggest smile on his face that I've ever seen. And he took the apple, and he walked around the village and showed every person in the village his apple. So proud of the apple. And then he started to eat it. And he ate it all, including the core. And then he just smiled. And the girl said, wow, he ate that whole thing, and I was going to throw it away. I knew from previous trips that the way we judge food, the way Americans judge food, is way different than the way people in the mountains judge food. I knew that if Danielle would give Orlando her apple, he would treasure it and eat it. I knew that his life and hers would be better if she offered him what she had. I knew that. And she did what I asked her to do, and it was better for a moment. I think I kind of experience what Jesus feels like. He knows how our lives are meant to be lived. He can see it when we can't see it. And he's willing to tell us. He wants us to know, but it's up to us to listen and obey. He doesn't make us do it, but he hopes we will. Because when we do, when we trust in the Lord with all of our heart and lean not on our own understanding, when we acknowledge him in all of our ways, he makes our paths straight. Folks, Jesus is really smart. And nice, and right. As we watched Orlando finish his apple, Danielle said, I wonder what else I've thrown away that he would have liked. We found out later that morning, Carrie Huff was holding Orlando in her lap. She was just rocking him. And he jumped down off of her lap, and he went over, and he picked up a wrapper from a breakfast chocolate chip granola bar that we had eaten. He saw it on the ground. He ran over, he picked it up, He went back, he climbed up in Carrie's lap again, and he started licking the wrapper for the little pieces of chocolate that had melted onto it. And when we saw that, our hearts melted, and we wanted to feed Orlando and his friends for the rest of their lives. We asked the missionary, what could we do to help the people of Plano de Chorcha? And he pointed to the church building pavilion we'd just built there. And Glenn said, if they can learn to trust God, he'll take care of them. And I thought, that's probably true for all of us. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all of your ways, and he will make your path straight. It would be good if we could memorize those verses. It would be even better if we were to do them. Let's pray.